You've finally broken loose from work. Three friends, one tea time, and then the text. Honey, there's water in the basement. Not exactly how you pictured your Saturday. That's when you call us, Cincinnati Insurance. We always answer the call, because real protection means showing up, even when things are in the rough. Cincinnati Insurance. Let us make your bad day better. Find an agent at CINFIN.com.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Welcome back to The Deep Dive. You're here for that shortcut, right? That way to really get under the skin of complex topics without, you know, drowning in the details.
That's the idea. Straight to the good stuff.
And today we are definitely diving deep. We're looking at the automotive world, specifically that extra layer of rules, those expectations that sit right on top of the big global standard, IATF 16949.
Exactly. IATF 16949, that's your foundation. It's like the basic language everyone in automotive quality speaks. But the big players, the OEMs, Stellantis, Ford, GM, all of them, they have their own unique spin.
Their own dialects, almost.
You could say that. They interpret things differently. They add requirements. They focus on certain areas based on their own experiences. And those are their customer-specific requirements, the CSRs.
Okay, so they tailor the global standard to fit their own, well, their own needs and maybe their own history of problems.
Precisely. It reflects their business priorities, where they've seen supplier issues pop up before. It's very targeted.
And our guide for this particular deep dive comes directly from, well, one of the biggest names out there, Stellantis. We're working from their document, Customer-Specific Requirements for Use with IATF 16949.
And it's the latest version, too. Version 1, just issued June 2025, effective July 2025. So this is fresh, current stuff.
We got this straight from the source, the IATF Global Oversight website, so you know it's the official word.
But, and this is a really important but right at the start, this document we're looking at today, it isn't the whole Stellantis rulebook, not by long shot.
Ah, okay, so it's something bigger.
Oh, yeah. The comprehensive set of requirements, the really big contractual document, is their quality requirements for suppliers. Everyone calls it the QRS.
Yeah.
That's reference number 01276200000061PRO.000109. The QRS is, well, it's exhaustive.
Okay, so the QRS is the massive encyclopedia. Then what exactly is this CSRs for Use with IATF 16949 document we're focusing on? What's its job?
Think of this document as the cliff notes for auditors. Stellantis put this together specifically for the certification bodies, the CBs, you know, the third-party auditors who come into your plant to do your IATF 16949 audit.
Right, the people checking if you meet the standard.
Exactly. So Stellantis gives them this document to help them zero in on the Stellantis CSRs that they consider most critical during that IATF audit. It's Stellantis basically saying, okay, auditors, from our giant QRS, here are the things we really want you to verify when you're checking IATF compliance.
Ah, I see. So it's like a cheat sheet for the auditors, pointing them to Stellantis' non-negotiables within the broader IATF framework.
That's a great way to put it. It ensures those key things don't get missed in the audit. They even mentioned a separate quick reference guide just for auditors, making it even easier for them.
Okay, that distinction is critical then. As a supplier, you don't just need to know the Stellantis rules in the QRS. You need to understand which specific rules they're explicitly telling the IATF auditors to check, because those are the ones tied directly to your certification.
Absolutely. Okay. It focuses the audit spotlight right where Stellantis wants it. And they even categorize these highlighted requirements to help the auditors structure their thinking.
Categories. How does that work?
There's category one. Sure. These are mostly Stellantis' interpretations of existing IATF clauses or how they want specific IAPF requirements applied on their programs. The rationale usually says something like, to help auditing IATF clauses on Stellantis programs. Pretty straightforward.
Okay, so Category 1 is about clarifying IATF for Stellantis use. What's Category 2?
Category 2 is where it gets maybe more interesting. These are supplemental requirements. Extra things Stellantis adds on top of IATF. And often, these directly target common weaknesses Stellantis has seen in their supply base over the years.
Weaknesses they found how? Through their own audits.
Exactly. Through their own second-party audits, or by studying the root causes of quality problems. So these Category 2 requirements often come with a specific rationale explaining why Stellantis added this rule, and sometimes even specific instructions telling the auditor exactly what evidence to look for.
That gives you a really clear window into Stellantis' priorities, doesn't it? And their pain points with suppliers historically.
It absolutely does. You can see where they've been burned before and where they're trying to strengthen controls.
And just a quick note on language before we really dive in. Stellantis uses a few terms interchangeably in this document. When they say organization, supplier, or tier one, they generally mean you, the company directly supplying them.
Right. And when they talk about sub-suppliers, subcontractors, or tier N, that's your suppliers and their suppliers further down the chain.
Good clarification. So our mission today is simple, really. We're going to walk through this auditor guidance document chapter by chapter, requirement by requirement. We'll unpack what Stellantis is flagging as critical, try to understand why it's critical based on the rationale, and figure out what you as a supplier need to do and what evidence the auditors will be looking for.
It's that shortcut to understanding Stellantis' specific IATF 16949 expectations.
Exactly. Ready to jump into the first section.
Let's do it. Where do we start?
Right at the beginning. The absolute baseline, the entry ticket to even play the game, IATF 16949 certification and how Stellantis sets up that initial relationship.
Okay, yeah, this is fundamental. And the document leaves no room for doubt. It states very clearly, you need IATF 16949 certification issued by an IATF recognized certification body before you can even establish a business relationship with Stellantis. Full stop.
That's the starting line. No certification, no business. It's their basic assurance you've got a proper automotive quality system running.
That's the baseline.
Is there any wiggle room? What if you're, say, a long-established company with a strong quality system, just not specifically IATF certified?
Well, there can be exceptions, but don't count on them easily. Stellantis might grant a certification waiver. This would typically be for an organization where Stellantis reviews their existing quality system and decides, okay, this is acceptable for our needs.
But that's Stellantis' call, not yours.
Absolutely. And critically, if you do get a waiver, its status must be officially registered and visible in the Stellantis scorecard.
The Stellantis scorecard. That's their online portal, right? Where they track supplier performance.
Exactly. It's accessible via their B2B portal. So even if you think you have a waiver, you have to go into that scorecard system and confirm it's logged correctly there. No record, no waiver, essentially.
Okay, step one, verify your status in the system. What if you are certified? Is it just get certified and forget?
Definitely not. The responsibility is on you, the supplier, to constantly verify that your IATF certification status shows up as valid, not canceled, not expired, in that same Stellantis scorecard.
And if it's missing or invalid in their system?
The document is explicit.
Yeah.
Penalties. It directly impacts your quality performance score.
Ouch. Wow, okay. So just having the certificate on your wall isn't enough. You need to actively manage its visibility and validity within the Stellantis ecosystem. That's a direct link between admin and performance.
It absolutely is. And this ties into something called the Unique Site Identifier, the USI. This is basically a code for your specific manufacturing location, often linked to a Stellantis code. You need to know your USI and work with your certification body to make sure the global IATF database is accurate and up to date with your certification details.
Because that IATF database feeds into the Stellantis system.
That's how the data flows. Correct USI, updated IATF database means correct status in the Stellantis scorecard. It all connects.
Okay, so hurdle one, get certified, keep it valid, and ensure Stellantis sees it correctly through their scorecard linked by your USI.
Got it. What about the people side? Once you're in, who's your main contact at Stellantis for quality stuff?
Good question. Stellantis has a specific structure for this. It falls under their global purchasing group, specifically Supplier Quality Development, or SQD.
SQD.
And the key thing they highlight here is that for each supplier plant, there should be one main operational contact person from Stellantis. That crucial point person is usually the Supplier Quality Engineer, the SQE. The SQE, yep, that's a familiar role, IATF itself requires you, the supplier, to have a designated customer representative, right? Hmm. Someone who handles customer requirements.
It does. And Stellantis takes that a step further. They explicitly require that your customer representative must know who their assigned Stellantis SQE is. It's a mandatory connection.
And the SQE is the go-to person for questions about these CSRs we're discussing.
Yes. The document points directly to the SQE for clarification on applying these requirements.
Yeah.
It does mention a backup, though. If for some reason no SQE is assigned to your site, which seems unusual, the Commodity Quality Champion, the CQC, who handles the bigger category of parts you supply, might be your contact.
But the SQE is the standard.
SQE is the primary expected contact. So rule number two for any Stellantis supplier, know your SQE. It's fundamental.
All right, so basics covered. Certification status visible, know your SQE. Now, how does Stellantis expect you to take all the requirements, the whole QRS, not just these highlighted ones, and weave them into your quality system?
Right. This brings us to section 4.3.2 in the IATF standard, which is all about customer-specific requirements. Even though this document we're reviewing is just a selection for auditors, Stellantis uses this section to hammer home a point from their main QRS document.
Which is?
That all applicable requirements within that comprehensive QRS document are considered Stellantis CSRs. Every single relevant rule in the big book counts.
So IATF 4.3.2 says you need to identify and integrate all customer requirements. Stellantis is reminding everyone, hey, remember our QRS? That's the all. This auditor document is just showing the auditors where to look first.
Exactly. Your obligation as the supplier, defined in the QRS and reinforced here, is to get the current version of the QRS, analyze it thoroughly, figure out what applies to you, and then integrate all of those applicable requirements into your QMS, your processes, your procedures, your work instructions, everything.
And what do auditors check for this specific clause 4.3.2?
It's simple but crucial. They look for evidence that you've actually done that analysis on the current version of the QRS, not just downloaded it, but demonstrably reviewed it and figured out its impact on your system.
That analysis step is key then, proof of review and integration.
It requires a systematic approach. You need a process for tracking external documents like the QRS, making sure you always have the latest version, reviewing it, and flowing down the requirements. And honestly, for suppliers dealing with multiple Stellantis brands or different types of parts, just keeping track of which QRS applies and its current revision can be a job in itself.
I can imagine. Now, sticking with these foundational principles, let's look at section 5.1, leadership and commitment. This seems to bring in some broader topics beyond just product quality, right?
It does. This connects your quality system to Stellantis's wider corporate values, particularly around human rights and environmental responsibility.
How so? What's the specific requirement?
Suppliers must adhere to social, ethical, and environmental principles. And the way you contractually commit to this is by signing the Stellantis Global Responsible Purchasing Guidelines, the GRPG. That's document 00614210-0397.
Signing the GRPG. Okay, that's one piece. Anything else?
Yes, another mandatory prerequisite listed here. All suppliers need to have a valid EcoVadis rating.
EcoVadis, that's the third-party sustainability assessment platform, isn't it? Stellantis is mandating that suppliers use it.
They are. It's a specific benchmark they're applying across their supply base to gauge environmental, social, and ethical performance.
Wow. Is just getting the rating enough, or is there a performance expectation?
There's a performance expectation. The document states that if your EcoVadis score dips below 25%, you're required to create and implement an action plan specifically aimed at improving that score.
So they're not just ticking a box. They expect you to either meet a certain level or show you're actively working towards it.
Exactly. It demonstrates a commitment to improvement in these areas.
So for these GRPG and EcoVadis requirements, what evidence are auditors looking for?
They need to see proof that the GRPG has been signed and, importantly, uploaded into the specified Stellantis IT system. They mentioned the Orion system here. For EcoVadis, they check that you've actually done the evaluation. And if your score is under that 25 threshold, they want to see evidence of that action plan you're supposed to have.
This really drives home how the definition of quality is broadening in automotive. It's not just about zero defects anymore. It's about being a responsible corporate citizen, too.
It reflects shifting expectations, definitely. Mm-hmm. Okay, moving on within these foundational areas, section 6.2.2.1 deals with quality objectives and planning with a Stellantis supplement.
The rationale is simple. For continuous improvement, I assume this relates to performance targets Stellantis sets for suppliers.
Exactly. Stellantis sets yearly quality performance targets. Your job as the supplier is to take those specific Stellantis targets and formally incorporate them into your own company's annual improvement plan. Having your own internal goals isn't enough. You must explicitly adopt and work towards the goals Stellantis sets for you.
And presumably you need action plans to achieve those goals.
Absolutely. Analysis, action plans, tracking progress, the usual continuous improvement cycle.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a critical piece here that often trips suppliers up, and it's a big focus for Stellantis.
What's that?
You must involve your own suppliers, your sub-suppliers, the tier ends in this whole process. You need to include them in your performance analysis related to the Stellantis targets, and you have to cascade those objectives down your supply chain.
Cascade them down? You mean give your suppliers targets too?
Yes, and ensure that the targets you give your suppliers are consistent with and will help you achieve the overall targets Stellantis gave you. For example, if Stellantis gives you a PPM target, you need to analyze which of your suppliers contribute to that, set appropriate targets for them, and show you're managing their performance towards those targets.
So it's about pushing that performance accountability down the chain, making sure everyone is aligned towards Stellantis's ultimate goal.
Precisely. It's about ensuring quality isn't just a tier one responsibility. What auditors check here is quite comprehensive. They look for proof that you actually know the Stellantis targets, that they're formally integrated into your internal objectives and how you monitor performance that links to IATF 9.1.3.1. They check that these targets are inputs to your management reviews per IATF 9.2.1, and they even look at the frequency of your management reviews, checking if it's appropriate given the performance trends and how fast your action plans are moving, which links to IATF 9.3.1.1.
That cascading requirement is definitely a key mechanism for driving improvement deep into the supply base. Stellantis is clearly putting pressure there. Okay, last one in this foundational block, 7.5.3.2.1, record retention.
Right. The rationale is about helping auditors verify appropriate retention periods on Stellantis programs. IATF 16949 has general requirements for record retention, you know, keep things for a certain time plus one calendar year, that sort of thing.
But Stellantis adds more detail.
They do. In their main QRS document, Stellantis defines specific minimum retention periods for certain types of documents. These might be longer than the general IATF guidelines.
So you can't just follow a generic automotive standard retention schedule. You need to check the QRS.
For the specific documents Stellantis calls out in the QRS, yes, you have to meet at least their minimum requirement. This document notes, no specific additional instruction to audit this clause, but the rationale tells the auditor what to do. Check the supplier's record retention process against the specific durations defined in the QRS.
Which means, for you as the supplier, you absolutely have to dig into the QRS, find that list of documents with special retention rules, and make sure your internal procedures meet or exceed those Stellantis minimums. Another detail you can't miss.
It's all about knowing those specific customer nuances layered on top of the standard.
Okay. Foundational stuff covered. Certification, relationships, integrating the QRS, broader commitments like GRPG and EcoVadis, cascading objectives, record retention. Now, let's shift into the operational gears. Communication, design, process controls, and especially those critical FMEAs. Where do we start here?
Let's start with communication. Section 8.2.1.1, Customer Communication Supplemental. The rationale, again, is to help auditing IATF clauses on Stellantis programs.
And the main point here seems pretty basic but essential. Use the tools and formats Stellantis tells you to use.
That's the core of it. You must use the specific IT systems and data formats mandated by Stellantis for exchanging information throughout the entire product lifecycle, quoting, development, production, everything.
And they list specific systems.
They do. For sourcing activities, it's the GST system. For design and development that includes your APQP and PPP work, you need to use either their PLM system or a system called OUROS. They note it's program dependent, so you need to know which one applies to your specific parts.
PLM or AUROS. Okay, need to confirm that per program. What about once you're in mass production?
For tracking quality incidents, they mention systems like Amadeus SQP or NCT, noting that these can vary by region. And for logistics data, like shipping notices, it's standard EDI electronic data interchange.
And like some other clauses, the auditor instruction is just see rationale.
Right. Which means the auditor, as part of checking your general IATF communication processes, will be looking for evidence that you are indeed using these required Stellantis systems and formats. It's not optional.
So using their platforms isn't just about making life easier. It's a hard requirement tied to your QMS compliance, non-negotiable for interacting with Stellantis effectively.
Exactly. It ensures data consistency and allows Stellantis to manage information efficiently across thousands of suppliers. Okay, now let's move into the design and development clauses, specifically how Stellantis handles special characteristics. This covers sections 8.2.3.1.2 and 8.3.3.3 together.
Special characteristics, those critical features for safety, regulations, function, etc. The rationale says this is to ensure they're properly designated and cascaded down. How does Stellantis define them?
The primary source for this information is a Stellantis document called the Part Inspection Standard, or PIS. This PIS is built based on their internal list of functional and technical characteristics, the CTF list, for the part, combined with Stellantis' specific classification system for those characteristics.
The PIS document. Okay, that's the key reference for suppliers. And the document mentions two different types of Stellantis special characteristics.
Yes, they make this distinction clear for the auditors. First, you have characteristics designated as CTF to audit. These are generally used for monitoring CTFs that are considered non-dispersive.
Non-dispersive, meaning they don't vary much in production.
Essentially, yes.
Okay.
Compliance for these is typically proven in lockdown during the development phase through measurements, calculations, maybe tests documented in your DVP&R or theirs. Once validated up front, the idea is that ongoing monitoring of that specific characteristic in mass production isn't the primary focus unless something significant changes. They are identified as CTF to audit in the PIS.
Okay, so CTF to audit, validate up front, less focus on production variation. What's the second type?
The second type is the CSE, which stands for Essential Monitored Characteristic. These are the ones used for monitoring CTFs that are expected to be dispersive. They have natural variation during mass production that needs to be controlled.
So CSEs are for things you actively track and control chart in production.
Exactly. Now, if the original CTF itself is easy and economical to measure directly on the finished part, then the CSE is the CTF. But if the CTF is hard to measure directly, maybe it's an internal feature or requires a destructive test, then Stellantis breaks that CTF down into one or more contributing CSEs that can be measured and monitored in production, and which collectively ensure the main CTF is met.
Got it. CTF to audit, non-dispersive, validated upfront. CSE, dispersive, monitored in production, possibly broken down from a CTF if needed. Makes sense.
It's a structured way to handle different types of critical features. The document also lists examples of the symbols Stellantis uses for classification, reminding us they can vary a bit by region or program. You might see parenthetical ones like S safety, P breakdown, M major, F low, or you might see bracketed ones like S safety, E emissions, H homologation. They also use shapes of stoplight or diamond D for critical, QH for capability, a simple dash for ordinary, and they add R specifically for regulatory attributes.
That list of symbols is handy, as OEMs definitely use different conventions. Besides defining and classifying the characteristics, what else is in that critical PIS document?
Several key things for the supplier. It specifies the required performance targets, think C, CKK minimums. It defines the control methods or means they expect you to use. And very importantly, it lists the minimum contractual inspection frequencies.
Minimum contractual frequencies.
Wow. Yeah. So Stellantis dictates how often you must check certain things, overriding your own judgment based on process stability.
For those specific characteristics listed in the PIS, yes. And this directly leads to a major supplier obligation. Your control plan must include, at the very least, all the special characteristics designated in the PIS. And the inspection frequencies you put in your control plan must be consistent with those minimums in the PIS.
Consistent meaning equal to or more frequent than the PIS.
Exactly. You can always check more often if you feel it's necessary, maybe during launch or if you have issues. But you can never check less often than the PIS mandates for those characteristics. Crystal clear. What if a supplier uses their own internal symbols for special characteristics?
That's allowed, but with a condition. You must create and maintain a documented cross-reference, an equivalence table, showing exactly how your internal symbols map to the official Stellantis symbols. And you need to reference this equivalence document whenever you communicate with Stellantis about these characteristics.
Okay, so auditors are checking all of this. List of specials documented, included in the control plan, frequencies match or exceed PIS, and if internal symbols are used, that equivalence is documented and referenced. That's a lot of specific detail they're verifying.
It really underscores how critical special characteristic management is for Stellantis. They leave very little to chance here.
Okay, moving slightly further into the process, section 8.3.3.2 talks about manufacturing process design input. The rationale mentions integrating lessons learned and best practices.
Right. And the specific Stellantis requirement here is that you must include any additional quality requirements, or AQRs, that Stellantis provides as mandatory inputs when you're designing your manufacturing process.
AQRs. Are these like specific instructions on how to make the part, maybe based on problems with previous designs or suppliers?
That's exactly the kind of thing they cover. If AQRs apply to your part, they'll be in the source package you receive, visible in the GST system, and you're expected to incorporate them during your APQP process as you define how you're going to manufacture the part.
And how would an auditor check this?
They'd look for evidence that you considered these AQRs. For example, they might look in your process flow diagram or your PFMEA to see if there are specific process steps or controls that directly address the requirements laid out in the AQRs.
So another specific input from Stellantis you have to actively look for and build into your process design.
It's about embedding Stellantis's specific knowledge and expectations right into your planning. And that flows naturally into the next section, 8.3.5.2, Manufacturing Process Design Output, which also references 8.3.5.1 on design outputs.
And the rationale here is pretty stark. To help auditing IATF clauses, also identified as a weakness in identifying failure modes and addressing the adequate level of controls. This sounds like it's going to be all about FEAs.
You guessed it. This is clearly a major focus area for Stellantis, likely due to recurring issues they've seen. They state the obvious. If you're design responsible, you need a design FEAA. All suppliers need a process FEA. They allow you to use established methods like the AIAG and VDA FEA handbook, or the older SAE J1739 standard, or even Stellantis' own templates or work instructions or something equivalent.
Okay, so there's some flexibility in the format or standard you use.
And this is a huge but. There's a critical non-negotiable requirement. Regardless of which FEA methodology or template you follow for the structure, when it comes time to evaluate the risk of the failure modes you've identified, you must use the Stellantis action priority tables.
Wait, really? So you can use the AIAG and VDA FMEA structure, but when you calculate the action priority based on severity, occurrence, and detection ratings, you have to ignore the AP tables in the AIAG and VDA handbook and use Stellantis' tables instead.
That is precisely what this requires. It's Stellantis' specific way of determining if a risk is high, medium, or low priority, and it overrides the generic industry tables. These Stellantis AP tables must be included or clearly referenced in your FMEA study summary documents.
Wow, okay, that is very specific. Any other mandatory FMEA rules here?
Yes, another really important one. The severity rating you assign to a failure mode must be linked to each specific characteristic affected. You can't just give one severity for the whole part failure. And here's the kicker. For any characteristic that Stellantis has classified as safety, any CTF or CSE with that safety symbol we talked about, the failure modes associated with it shall be assigned a severity rating of 10 in the PFMEA.
Mandatory severity 10 for anything linked to a safety characteristic. No discussion, no interpretation.
None. It automatically makes any potential failure affecting a safety feature the highest possible severity level in your risk analysis.
So what are auditors checking for FMEAs?
They are specifically verifying these two key points. One, are you using the Stellantis action priority tables? They note the SQE might grant a temporary exception if you have a documented plan to switch, but the default is you must use them. Two, do all failure modes linked to safety classified characteristics have a severity of 10 assigned in the PFMEA?
This section is a perfect example of Stellantis getting extremely prescriptive. If you just apply generic FMEA training or use the standard handbook without knowing and implementing these mandatory Stellantis overrides, especially the AP tables and the severity 10 rule, you're walking straight into a non-conformance.
It's a high-risk area for suppliers who aren't aware of these specifics. Equivalent just won't cut it here without explicit temporary permission.
Okay, we've really unpacked the details on communication, design inputs, special characteristics, AQRs, and those critical FMEA mandates. Now let's shoot focus to another area Stellantis explicitly called out as a weakness, how you manage your own suppliers, the tier N chain. This is covered in sections 8.4.2.4, 8.4.4.1, and 8.4.2.1.
Yes, this is clearly a major priority for them. The rationale in 8.4.2.4, supplier monitoring, pulls no punches. It says the purpose is to ensure a robust supplier management, and then flat out states this is an identified weakness currently at Tier 1, top issues.
Wow, calling it a top issue certainly sends a strong message, and they feel the standard IATF requirements aren't enough here.
Apparently not. They add more detail. The core requirement is that you, the Tier 1, have to actively manage your subcontractors, your Tier Ns, to make sure they meet Stellantis' requirements. And you also have to ensure their processes adhere to a specific Stellantis procedure, GSQN-011, Global Stellantis Tier N Management.
GSQN-011. Okay, so Stellantis has a whole procedure dedicated to how you should manage your suppliers.
They do. And this document highlights one mandatory requirement from GSQN 011. You must implement a formal risk classification method for your own supply chain.
A risk classification for my suppliers. What criteria does Stellantis expect me to use for that?
They spell out the required criteria you need to consider. First, the classification of the part or material your supplier provides you. Here's a critical point.
Yeah.
If your supplier provides components or materials that have safety characteristics, you must classify that supplier as high risk, period.
Wait, even if that supplier has perfect delivery and quality history with me, if they make a safety-related component for me, I have to label them high risk in my system.
That's what the requirement states regarding safety characteristics. It's an automatic trigger. Other criteria you must include are things like industrial risks. Maybe they have very high production volumes or a complex process. You also need to consider their actual quality performance. How many issues have you had? How severe were they? Any field problems trace back to them? And finally, any other criteria you think are relevant for product or manufacturing risks with that supplier.
Okay, so it's a mix of mandated criteria, like the safety component rule and supplier judgment. Is this classification a one-time thing?
No, definitely not. You have to review this classification regularly. The minimum frequency is once a year, but you also need to review it if any major event happens, like a quality spill at your plant, zero-kilometer issues, field returns traced to them, or significant changes at the supplier's facility.
And auditors check this?
Yes. They look for evidence that you have this risk classification method documented and implemented for your suppliers, and that you're actually doing those regular reviews.
That's a clear framework. Classify your suppliers using specific rules, pay special attention to safety components, and keep the assessment fresh.
It really puts the onus on the Tier 1 to understand and actively manage the risks coming from their own supply base. Now, building directly on that risk classification, Section 8.4.2.4.1 covers second-party audits. The rationale is consistent, ensuring robust supplier management.
Okay, so I've used the criteria. I've identified my medium and high-risk suppliers. Now what?
Now you have to audit them. The requirement is clear. You must conduct audits of the suppliers you have classified as medium or high risk.
Mandatory audits for my riskier suppliers. What's the purpose of these audits?
The goal is to verify that these sub-suppliers are actually respecting the Stellantis requirements that flow down to them through you, related to the parts or services they provide. And Stellantis has a preferred tool for these audits.
Let me guess, something with Stellantis in the name.
You got it. They strongly prefer you use the Stellantis Manufacturing Requirements for Suppliers, MRS, standard audit tool. Or, if not that specific tool, then a similar one that meets or exceeds the same standards.
So risk classification drives mandatory audits, preferably using their MRS checklist. Anything else?
Yes, there's a reporting piece. You have to share the results of these second-party audits you perform on your suppliers with Stellantis annually.
So I audit my suppliers using their preferred tool, and then I have to send Stellantis a report card on how my suppliers did.
Essentially, yes. The auditors will check for evidence that you have indeed audited your high and medium risk Tier 2s, or Tier Ns, and that you've sent those results to Stellantis as required.
That is a significant flow down of responsibility. You're not just managing your quality, you're actively policing your suppliers' compliance with Stellantis rules and reporting back. Wow.
It shows how serious Stellantis is about driving quality improvements through the entire chain, making the Tier 1 responsible for verification downstream.
Okay, the one more piece in the supply chain section.
Yeah.
8.4.2.1, type and extent of control supplemental.
The rationale mentions this is a preventative measure for all new or modified parts or any major change. What's the specific requirement?
This introduces the concept of proactive containment, which you probably know better as safe launch. But the key here is that Stellantis requires you to mandate this from your sub-suppliers.
So I have to make my suppliers do safe launch, not just do it myself. That's the requirement stated here. You must require your suppliers, your Tier Ns, to implement a proactive containment safe launch process during the launch period for any new or modified parts they supply to you, or after they make any major changes to their manufacturing process.
Why push it down to them?
The stated goal is to make their control plan robust right from the start and prevent them from shipping non-conforming parts to you when production begins or changes are implemented. This connects forward to Section 8.6.1, where we'll talk more about safe launch requirements for the Tier 1.
And auditors check this.
They check for evidence that your supplier management procedures include this requirement that you formally require safe launch from your sub-suppliers under these specific conditions.
Okay, that's another powerful proactive control being cascaded down the entire supply chain. control your launch and make sure your suppliers control theirs too.
It acknowledges that problems often start further upstream, so the controls need to be there too.
All right, we've dug deep into managing the supply chain. Let's move on to controlling changes during production, the actual release of products, including revisiting safe launch, and how Stellantis wants rework handled. This involves sections 8.5.6.1, 8.6.1, and 8.7.1.4. Let's start with 8.5.6.1, control of changes supplemental.
Okay. The rationale mentions helping auditors and addressing identified supplier weaknesses in assessing the feasibility and risk of changes. For any change you, the supplier, initiate after launch post-PPP, you have to follow the rules in a specific Stellantis procedure. Product and process changes in serial life, referenced as 012763000000CEP.000081.
A critical step is that you must perform a formal risk assessment study as part of your change request. This could be an impact analysis, maybe building a bank of parts with the change for testing, or doing a specific revalidation study. The procedure also demands that you classify the change using Stellantis' system, A, B, C, or D.
And that A, B, C, D classification determines what happens next. Exactly. Each classification level dictates the amount of validation testing required and the specific level of PPAP submission you need to send to Stellantis for approval. It's a structured, risk-based approach.
Makes sense. Anything else required with the change request?
Yes. You also have to attach a part protection plan.
Mm.
This plan needs to detail how you'll manage the transition, prevent mixing old and new stock, and ensure only approved parts are shipped during and after the change implementation.
And auditors verify.
They check that your internal change management process actually incorporates this Stellantis procedure, including the A, B, C, D classification. They also verify that you're doing the required level of validation after your risk assessment based on that classification.
This sounds like a very rigorous process to prevent changes from causing new problems, which is definitely a risk point in serial production.
It aims to minimize unintended consequences by forcing that upfront risk assessment and structured validation. Okay, next up is 8.6.1, Release of Products and Services Supplemental.
This section gets into the production part approval process. PPP. Stellantis uses PPP, requires status A before shipment without deviation. Pretty standard stuff.
Mostly standard, but with one very important Stellantis-specific detail that this document highlights specifically because it tripped up suppliers before. Stellantis does not sign the Production Part Approval Warrant, PSW.
They don't sign the PSW, but the PSW is like the key document in the standard AIAG PPP package, the customer sign-off sheet.
It is in the standard process, which is exactly why Stellantis calls this out explicitly here for the auditors. Their process is different. You, the supplier, find out your official PPP approval status by checking the relevant Stellantis IT system. You don't get a signed PSW back from them.
That is a huge piece of practical information. If you're supplying Stellantis, don't waste time waiting for or asking for a signed PSW. Look in their system for the verdict.
Precisely. The rationale even mentions this clarification was needed because suppliers were having trouble showing auditors a signed PSW as evidence.
Okay, good heads up. This section also revisits proactive containment or safe launch, doesn't it?
It does. We just talked about requiring it from your sub-suppliers
in
8.4.2.1. Now, this is about your implementation when you launch parts to Stellantis.
And the rationale is the same, validating the control plan under real production conditions.
Exactly. It's a required preventive step for any new or significantly modified parts or after major process changes. You must set up a dedicated safe launch area or station as an extra layer of inspection and verification on top of your normal controls, specifically to validate your production control plan's effectiveness at the start of serial production.
Is there a specific Stellantis procedure for how to do this?
Yes, there is. The detailed requirements for setting up safe launch, how to run it, and critically, the specific exit criteria you must meet before you can stop doing it are all defined in Stellantis procedure proactive containment, which is GSQN.004-0159820.972.
GSQN.004 for safe launch.
Okay. Does it apply only to new launches?
No. The document also explicitly states that safe launch is required to protect Stellantis plants after any planned or unplanned shutdowns at your facility. Think holiday breaks, major maintenance, or unexpected disruptions. It's a way to re-verify process stability after potential drift.
So it's a restart control, too. Makes sense.
What about exiting safe launch? Is getting KPAP approval enough?
Absolutely not. This is another critical point they emphasize. Achieving PPAP status A does not automatically mean you can stop safe launch. You have to meet the specific exit criteria defined in that GSQN.004 procedure. Think of it this way. PP proves your process can make good parts under controlled conditions. Safe launch proves your process is making good parts consistently over time under actual production pressure.
That's a crucial distinction. PPAP is the potential. Safe launch is the proof in practice. What do auditors look for regarding safe launch at the Tier 1? They check that the process is built into your launch and change procedures, including the flow down to sub-suppliers we discussed earlier. If you have a program in safe launch during the audit, they'll go look at the area. Is it clearly marked? Good lighting. Clear instructions. Are operators trained? Are records being kept? Are reaction plans posted and followed if issues are found? If nothing is actively in safe launch, they'll ask where it usually happens and review records from your most recent safe launch activities.
This really shows how much emphasis Stellantis puts on verifying process capability in the real world, especially during those risky transition periods or afterstops.
It's a practical check to catch problems early. Okay, last piece in this block, 8.7.1.4, control of reworked product.
Rework. Always a tricky area. The rationale mentions helping auditors, ensuring rework is handled correctly in FMEAs and control plans, and getting Stellantis approval for unplanned rework.
Right. Stellantis makes a clear distinction here. If rework is a normal planned part of your process, maybe a standard buffing or touch-up step, then it needs to be fully documented in your process flow, analyzed in your PFMEA, and included in your control plan. This planned rework sequence has to be qualified right alongside your main process during PPP.
So treat planned rework like any other validated process step. What if it's not planned, like something goes wrong unexpectedly?
That's where the strict control kicks in. For any unplanned rework, you must get specific authorization from Stellantis before you perform it. You have to submit your proposed rework method and an analysis of potential impacts to them for approval first.
So no ad hoc rework allowed. You need customer permission if it wasn't part of the original plan?
Correct. This is to prevent uncontrolled fixes that might introduce new, unforeseen problems. And whether the rework was planned or unplanned, but authorized, every single reworked part needs clear identification. A mark, a specific serial number range, something. And critically, every rework part must undergo full re-verification against all original specifications, dimensions, function, appearance, reliability, everything, not just the feature that was reworked.
Full re-verification is key, ensuring the fix didn't break something else. And auditors, again, no specific additional instruction.
Right, which means they'll verify compliance by checking your documentation. Is planned rework in your PFMEA and control plan? For unplanned rework, do you have the Stellantis authorization records and the results of that full re-verification?
It definitely highlights the need for strict control over any deviation from the qualified process, especially unplanned ones.
Rework can introduce significant risks if not managed tightly.
Okay, that covers changes, release, PPT nuances, safe launch, and rework. We've gone through a massive amount of detail already, from the basics of certification and relationships, integrating the whole QRS, EcoVadis, cascading objectives, specific IT systems, the intricacies of special characteristics in the PIS, AQRs, the mandatory Stellantis FMEA rules, then the whole section on managing tier ends with risk classification and audits, mandating safe launch downstream, controlling serial changes, the PSW quirk, Tier 1 safe launch requirements, and now rework controls.
It's a lot mapping out Stellantis' specific footprint on top of the IETF standard.
Definitely. Now let's wrap up this deep dive by looking at the final sections, typically covering performance monitoring, audits, problem solving, and continual improvement roughly corresponding to IETF sections 9 and 10. Where do we begin here?
Let's start with 9.1.2.1, customer satisfaction. The main point here is clarification from Stellantis on what they officially count as a complaint that impacts your satisfaction scores.
And what's their definition?
Very specific. Only complaints formally registered in their complaint management system, the CMS, count towards those key customer satisfaction metrics. This separates formal complaints from, say, emails, phone calls, or minor feedback.
Okay, CMS is the official channel for things that hit your scorecard. What if a supplier keeps having problems, even if they aren't all formal CMS complaints initially?
Stellantis has internal tools for that. They can issue warning letters, put a supplier to escalation level 1, then level 2, and ultimately can place them on new business hold, stopping them from getting future contracts. These are Stellantis' internal performance management steps.
Internal steps, got it. Do these internal escalations ever connect to the formal IETF certification process?
They absolutely can. And this is a huge point. Stellantis explicitly states they reserve the right to request the decertification process through the official IATF rules and the IATF CMS. This can happen if your performance issues are severe and long-lasting, if you're stuck in their internal escalation process, or if they identify a major breach of IATF or their own CSRs.
Wow. So internal problems can trigger a formal IATF complaint aimed at potentially pulling your certification.
Yes. When they consider decertification, they launch a formal performance complaint via the IATS CMS process, and you get formal written notification. It's serious.
And how does Stellantis expect suppliers to respond to such a formal IATF CMS complaint?
The focus is critical. They expect your response to identify the systemic root causes behind the performance issues. And they specifically require you to pinpoint the IATF clauses that Stellantis believes your systemic failures have violated.
Systemic root causes and linking them back to IATF clauses, that goes way beyond just explaining the technical reason for the bad parts.
Much deeper. And there's a very important note here for both suppliers and auditors. Your action plan might fix the immediate problem, the symptom, but might not address the underlying systemic QMS issue that allowed it to happen. The note clearly states, Stellantis accepting your corrective action plan for the immediate fix does not close the IATF CMS complaint if you haven't adequately addressed those systemic QMS root causes.
So you can fix the parts, Stellantis might even acknowledge that, but the formal IATF complaint stays open until you fix the system.
That's the message. They're using the IATF process to force suppliers to look at fundamental system weaknesses. Auditors are even told that if your response is unclear on systemic issues, they need to contact the Stellantis person who initiated the complaint for clarification.
That note really emphasizes Stellantis' commitment to driving real system improvement, not just papering over cracks. Okay, let's move to audits. Section 9.2.2.1, Internal Audit Program.
Right. The rationale calls this specific to Stellantis and Key to ensure a robust manufacturing system. This connects back to the Stellantis manufacturing requirements for suppliers, MRS standard we mentioned earlier.
The MRS standard again. So this isn't just for auditing your suppliers. You need to use it on yourself.
Exactly. You are required to implement a manufacturing system that meets the MRS standard. You need to assess your own operations against it, identify any gaps, and create action plans to close those gaps. And the specific auditable requirement here, you must conduct and provide Stellantis with an annual MRS self-assessment.
An annual self-audit against their specific manufacturing standard, that's a significant internal activity.
It is. Auditors check for evidence of this. Have you done the gap analysis against MRS? Do you have action plans for the gaps, often using a specific worksheet mentioned within the MRS standard? Are you doing this review annually and tracking your progress?
So the MRS becomes a mandatory benchmark for your own internal manufacturing audits and improvement efforts.
It drives alignment with their expectations. Next audit type, 9.2.2.3, manufacturing process audit.
The rationale. Specific to Stellantis and Key for quality improvement, standard respect. This one mandates layered process audits, or LPA.
Correct. LPA is a specific requirement. The goal is to verify, on the shop floor, that established standards are being consistently followed. These aren't necessarily done by quality auditors. The document says operational managers typically perform them. But whoever does them needs to be trained in the LPA process.
And where do these LPAs need to happen?
The scope is broad. All operational manufacturing and logistic areas in your plan. And critically, audits need to cover all operating shifts in those areas.
All areas, all shifts. That requires a lot of participation and coordination. Who needs to be involved?
The requirement is for all management levels to be involved, from team leaders up to top management. At a minimum, the management of the operational teams themselves, like shift leaders, area managers, must participate in conducting LPAs. You also need reaction plans ready for immediate containment and correction if an LPA finds a problem.
And auditors check for?
Evidence of the LPA process itself, checklists used, schedule, proof that it's actually happening across areas and shifts, and confirmation that top management is reviewing the LPA results regularly.
LPA sounds like a key tool for Stellantis to ensure standards aren't just written down, but are living practices on the floor, with management actively checking.
It's about verifying execution. Okay, one more audit type, 9.2.2.4. Product audit. The rationale here highlights a specific problem. Suppliers being too slow providing data for conformity of production, COP audits. Right, this ties into regulatory compliance. The requirement is that if Stellantis requests specific product compliance information, things like dimensional reports, per the PIS, ideally digitized, audit reports, or access to your production control plan results, you must provide it within 1 week.
1 week. Okay, seems manageable for pulling data.
Usually. But there's a critical exception. If Stellantis needs this data because they are being audited by an external body, like a regulatory agency doing a COF audit at their plant, or an ISO or IATF audit of Stellantis itself, then your deadline shrinks drastically to 48 hours.
48 hours to pull potentially complex compliance data and send it? That's intense.
It requires very robust data management systems. You need to be able to grab that specific evidence quickly. And the penalty for missing that 48-hour window is severe. A supplier incident report and a hit to your bid list score, which can affect future business awards.
So you need to be prepared for these audit emergencies from Stellantis. Auditors check if you have this rapid response capability built into your process.
Exactly. Your system needs to support that quick turnaround.
All right, let's move to problem solving. Section 10.2.3. The rationale is pretty blunt again. Recurring weakness, root causes analysis not robust enough, and PFMEA not consequently updated.
They're calling out suppliers again for not digging deep enough or learning from mistakes. The requirement is to follow their specific claim procedure. Global Stellantis Supplier Claim Procedure, GSQN.001. And they stress respecting the timelines within it.
Okay. Follow their procedure. Any specific tools mentioned?
Yes. For handling incidents in mass production, you must use the official Stellantis tracking system, Amadeus SQP or NCTNG, depending on region, to submit your 8D reports.
Standard 8D. But the rationale complained about weak root cause analysis and lack of PFMEA updates. How do they address that in the requirements?
This is the core point. You have to use the failure data from 0 kilometers issues at their plants, from field returns, to conduct in-depth analysis. This analysis needs to uncover both the immediate technical root cause and the underlying systemic root causes within your QMS or manufacturing process that allowed the failure to happen in the first place. Based on that deep dive, you implement actions.
And the link back to the PFMEA.
The rationale strongly implies it. The results of this robust root cause analysis identifying systemic failures should be used to update your foundational documents like PFMEAs, control plans, work instructions, etc., to prevent recurrence.
So the 8D isn't just paperwork. It's a trigger for fundamental system analysis and updates.
That's the intent. Auditors will look for evidence you're using GSQN.001, meeting timelines, using their IT systems for ADs, and most importantly, that your problem-solving records show that deep dive into both technical and systemic causes, leading to appropriate system updates.
It reinforces that theme we saw with the CMS complaints. Fix the system, not just the symptom.
Consistently. Okay, nearly there.
Yeah.
Section 10.2.5, Warranty Management System.
Rationale. Key process to ensure customer satisfaction. Makes sense.
Stellantis requires you to have a defined warranty management process. This must include a method for analyzing returned warranty parts and specifically calls out including analysis of no trouble found NTF parts. They also list minimum required elements for your process.
What are those minimums?
You need an identified warranty coordinator, daily checks of the Stellantis portal for new incidents, a process for managing suspect part returns, available engineering quality resources for analysis, and crucially, immediate customer protection actions, containment, and prompt communication to all affected Stellantis plants when an issue is confirmed.
That immediate containment and plant notification seems critical for them.
Absolutely. Minimize disruption. They also mentioned that using the AIHG CQI-14 guideline for warranty management is considered a best practice. If you don't use CQI-14, your own process must, at a minimum, cover all those specific points Stellantis listed.
So adopt the industry standard or build your own process that meets their detailed minimums. It shows they expect a structured approach even for field returns.
It's about closing the loop and learning from field experience.
Okay, finally, the last specific requirement highlighted, 10.3.1, Continual Improvement Supplemental.
And the rationale is, again, very focused. Key process to ensure PFMEA robustness and update, the specific requirement. You must have a reverse PFMEA process in place.
Reverse PFMEA? What on earth is that? Sounds intriguing.
It's a very proactive hands-on technique. The idea is to identify new potential failure modes missed in the original PFMEA, or to verify if the existing controls are truly effective. And you do this by going to the actual workstation on the shop floor and intentionally trying to make the defect happen.
You try to cause the failure mode right there on the line.
Exactly. You challenge the process. Can this failure actually occur? If it does, did the detection method catch it? Are the prevention controls really working? It's about physically testing the assumptions made in your paper, FMEA, against shop floor reality.
That's a fascinating practical approach, like stress testing your FMEA.
It really is. These reverse PFMEA activities need to be scheduled, tracked, and managed. Auditors check if you have this process, if you're genuinely trying to create defects to challenge failure modes, if you have a defined frequency, regularly, or risk-based, and if you're planning and tracking these reviews.
This feels like a direct answer to the complaints about weak FMEAs and root cause analysis. If you can't find the weaknesses reactively, go find them proactively on the floor.
A powerful way to connect the documentation to the reality and drive real improvement in your controls.
And that brings us to the end of the specific requirements outlined in this Stellantis document for auditors. The document notes its revision history first release, June 2025, effective July 2025, confirming this is all current and actionable right now.
A major set of expectations for suppliers to integrate.
Absolutely. So just to quickly wrap up everything we've covered in this deep dive, we started with the non-negotiable IATF certification and making sure Stellantis sees it via their scorecard, knowing your SQE. Then the crucial need to integrate the entire QRS, not just this guide. We saw broader requirements like signing the GOPG and getting an EcoVadis rating. We talked about cascading Stellantis quality objectives down to your tier N suppliers and specific record retention rules from the QRS. We covered the mandatory IT systems for communication, the incredibly detailed rules for special characteristics from the PAS, CTF to audit versus CSEs, symbols, frequencies, incorporating AQRs into process design, and those critical FMEA mandates using Stellantis AP tables and severity 10 for safety. Then we dove into managing your tier N's mandatory risk classification, safety was high risk, second party audits using MRS, reporting results, and mandating safe launch from them. We looked at controlling serial changes via their procedure, ABCD classification, protection plans, the PPIAP process quirk, no sign PSW, implementing tier one safe launch, GSQN.004, exit criteria, use after shutdowns, and the strict rules for rework, especially unplanned requiring authorization and full re-verification. And finally, we covered performance monitoring via the IATF CMS, focus on systemic root causes,
mm-hmm.
and the MRS annual self-assessment, mandatory layered process audits, the rapid 48-hour response for product audit data, using their systems for 8Ds with in-depth analysis, minimum warranty system requirements, including NTF, and that proactive reverse PFMEA process.
That's a comprehensive summary. You can really see the pattern. Stellantis is focusing on areas where they've had issues: supplier management, FMEA robustness, change control, problem solving depth, and implementing very specific, often prescriptive requirements to drive improvement. Understanding the why behind these, the rationale, helps make sense of them. They aren't arbitrary. They're targeted based on experience.
And for you, the learner, hopefully walking through this auditor's guide has given you that essential shortcut. You now have a much clearer picture of Stellantis' top priorities layered onto IATF 16949 and what auditors are specifically trained to look for. It should help you focus your compliance and improvement efforts.
It definitely highlights where to put your energy beyond just meeting the basic IATF clauses when you're supplying Stellantis.
So let's leave you with a final thought to chew on. Stellantis puts immense emphasis on things that require direct, hands-on verification and proactive effort managing suppliers down the chain. LPA walking the floor, reverse PFMEA intentionally trying to break the process. How might this very practical, verification-heavy approach, pushing responsibility deep into the supply chain and onto the shop floor, change how we traditionally think about quality management, which sometimes can feel very documentation-focused? What does this shift towards proving effectiveness in the real world, not just on paper, signal about the future direction of automotive quality assurance?
That's a great question. It certainly challenges traditional approaches and suggests a move towards more dynamic, shop floor-centric validation of quality systems, something definitely worth considering.